perhaps you should start, Michael, in leading us into these two sculptures and how they came about, and then maybe the subsequent visits to the studio with Katie, and then maybe Katie could elaborate on what happened.
Yeah, well, I guess I could start recapping what I originally proposed, and then that, I guess, would give an idea of the development of that. I guess one of the main things I was looking at within this space was seeing quite a space out here, as well as inside, and that one being the enclosure. And I was working as well with my studies, I was building containers of some description anyway. So I was intrigued by that space, but I wanted that. I was thinking about how to use this space and to have some kind of spillage up from the enclosure. And that, I guess I was looking at other less detailed, perhaps random ideas, residue being left over within a space that hints towards something else having just left, and that is maybe an access point to something else that is beyond us. If I start specifying that much more, I will start talking about the divine. And I guess that's what I was thinking at the start, and I've sort of carried a few of those into this, I think, but it's certainly changed, and certainly the studio visits I've had from you guys have been overwhelmingly, I felt overwhelmingly supported.
So this is Uncontained 2, but Uncontained 1, did that develop from the same, from the start of the same period?
Yes.
You had that already at one of the studio visits that I came to, yep. I think, from you.
Yep.
Had you made that recently, or?
The one for Uncontained, which showed a bus recently, that was a work that I wanted to put in this space here.
But that wasn't what you proposed.
But it wasn't what I proposed, because by the time I proposed, I realised that that object didn't fit. There's no way it would fit, so I had to come up with something else. I guess part of the proposal when I submitted to you guys was that I would have two shows. So I'd still use that original object, which was what a lot of my thoughts were revolving around. But I put that aside for another show, and if I could, hold two shows at the same time in two different spaces, so that there could be a sort of tour between the two, and give an idea through the variation of what was going on.
You were going to use the corner initially in your proposal,
right? Yeah.
There was a strong sense of the corner installation and having a weighted piece across the top of the enclosure. Contraption.
Yeah.
And the changes came out of the visits. Is that how that happened? Or
yeah.
Naturally?
I think they, I don't know how much you've moved on from that when we started talking about the interior.
I had the impression that I wouldn't really be shown here, so I let the idea go to one side and totally went on with some other stuff. And then, finding out that I could still have this show, it was a great opportunity to push beyond those ideas, because so often you propose a show and it's very underdeveloped. And I could certainly see that proposal was underdeveloped as well. And coming into the space more and more and giving it time to sit, just allow it to brew and for ideas to settle. And that time, I think, was essential for any of the work to happen. So,
because we were kind of talking about the encounter of the work, I think, weren't we? Because when you were proposing, they were quite pictorial, they were quite sort of
It was a real strong figurative element.
Yeah, and there was a sort of quite a strong narrative, I suppose. There still is in some ways. It wasn't that. We were talking about how the viewer actually approaching the world. Not necessarily just follow a certain logic, I suppose, in the way that you pictured them in the first proposal. And we were trying to work out how the viewer placed themselves within that as a sort of, as almost like a scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were kind of alluding to that, but they were almost like a picture of something other than the real thing.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that quite a lot of things as well.
Because this is so much a physical experience you have with the work, it's, although it has obviously visual readings, the ontology of that object, its density, its mass, its weightiness is extraordinary. And so it, for me, that shifts us out of a sort of a graphic reading, I'm probably misconstruing what
you're doing.
But also the way that sort of sense of, I suppose what you call like a true sculptural language of materiality, how that's integrated with the materiality of the gallery as well, so keenly. You know, the way it's concrete and steel, much like a lot of the structure in this building. I find very interesting the play on density and absence on the object, incredibly poetic and engaging, but you know, on the one hand it feels incredibly weighty, and then you do have that sense of absence or void through the floor.
Yeah, they do levitate, these two works, quite a lot. Mm-hmm.
I think initially, looking at the proposal, there was quite a literal, almost an anxious take on how the work, I say work as opposed to objects, at that time they were more, less object like more scattered, the gestures you were making. But there was a literalness to how they related. Both the enclosure and the wider building, and I think there was a certain sort of anxiousness that came through. You somehow wanted the viewer to make that connection. And I think what you've ended up with is a much less literal connection, a stronger connection, but as Kit said, there was a material connection, but also quite a perceptual connection between the enclosure space, the object in the enclosure space, and outside this work, the gallery space. But it's quite layered as to how the viewer sort of, as Katie used the word, encounters the work.
The other ones were really interlinked as well, essentially like an unfolding that was occurring. So there was the link between the one on the ceiling in that way to the one on the floor, as I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It was like it was kind of that spillage of some sort of narrative that was pretty distinctly in mind.
Yeah.
But the these two seem slightly separated. Which work, when was that work, the Lapback?
The last one was finished literally weeks before the show opened. So I was, which meant I was even adjusting the work in the space.
So up until that point, was there a possibility that they're just
About, I guess, midway through between the proposal and showing, I had this concrete piece ready to go, but then I had this other space that I kept seeing as being empty and unused. So, I mean, given that I had the time to work with that, I did, and there was other ideas to do, but this was the one that I sort of ended up doing. I mean, there was quite a few other ideas that you would probably think quite grand and nuts, but.
So when the work was being made, Michael, and you guys are obviously visiting the studio, I'll take it.
Katie, not so much us.
So coming up in this conversation, there's a notion of the work being made for the space. Is this kind of, or is that a managed reading?
No, yeah. It definitely made for this space. I mean, it's all, it's, everything gets incorporated to the official study that I'm sort of doing.
So what's its afterlife then?
Oh, I have Well, that's a question that you exist on all of the works.
Quite a word to you.
I was thinking because
you're going there a little bit early. You
know. No, the conversation is having constructed the what's come into realization in keeping with a proposal for this particular space, but the work. I'm just wondering where, you know, what you know, in a work that's so strong. I mean, and what were you thinking?
Yeah.
To come up with these kinds of sarcophagi.
I think it's well, it's carried through. I'm not sure if this will answer your question, but it's carried through over a number of years of developing it. And certainly, like a few years ago, I was still looking at the object, but I was looking at it more as if what the object contained in its entity, in its materiality, was that's where it held the potential to be this mysterious or this kind of object that would be encountered. But after showing a bit of work that seemed to me rather unsuccessful, I was a part of that show at St. Pat's Cathedral, which you saw over here, and I excavated the interior of a trunk, which I had shown previously, but I was sort of re-transforming this trunk. And that doing that thing, doing that act within this object and actually taking the materiality away from it, and it still took a while to actually understand that as almost a totally different approach to why I would make these objects as so heavy and dense, I guess.
Yeah, there are lovely sort of, you know, lightness in these works, though. You know, this idea of excavation is very strong with this enclosure work and this one, too. You know, there's the hole, and that hole in the gallery floor, it's just, where does that lead to? And then it sort of brings up the phoneness of the materiality of the work, you know, the rendering of inside the hole, and as if, you know, saying to Dave Adrian, it reminds me of, you know, Charles Bronson in The Great Escape, where the coffee's poured onto the tunnel in the shower block, and it seeps through, and it's got that feel about it, because the concrete just seems too fresh and new, but it's just something really delightful, you know, and it's the angle of view to the work that's so beautiful in the enclosure. The ability to be able to, I've stood on top of it, so. And the precipice and the vertigo quality, looking over into the drain, and the comfort that's there with this, the darkness is so much caught up with, you know, the flashback and the comfort of memory, and that's what's in these two works. I'm so happy to just love to walk down there and curl up into the human dog box, and you know, it just makes me feel completely comfortable, and I like, you don't get that sort of thing from this type of work so often. Mm. It doesn't rely on how it's made. It gives you a destination to go to. Mm. And both of them are very successful in doing it.
Within the, I guess, the narrative of the work, is that the idea of the work having a material integrity or a weight to them, is that piece hollow? I know that it is hollow, but is it?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have a floor
either,
it doesn't have a
base. No. Yeah, I mean, the material integrity, when I, say, discussed some of that with you earlier, Katie, to explain to the other guys, I saw that more to do, not necessarily with making this thing a solid object, but it's totally, it's a block rather than a container. But what it's made of, so even as a container, that it would have, that it would be really concrete, and that the viewer can look at it and know that it's concrete without reading a sheet of paper that says this is the material it's made of. It's obvious. That's what it is, and it's all, and then it would be obvious that, or any, I guess, encounter with it or realization of that would mean that there's no, well, there shouldn't be any confusion with thinking that it's fake. Like, this is real. What is this here?
I think what I'm getting quite strongly is this play between, you know, surface and depth and feelings. It's an interesting play for me because a lot of perhaps and a certain generation of artists now don't believe in the notion of depth. So you can't really have surface unless you have this antithesis, which is depth. And you obviously believe in depth, whether it's a drain, whether it's how deep is that concrete casting, the illusion of heaviness as opposed to the real heaviness. We had so many conversations about heaviness. Is it possible to get something this heavy upstairs? And you know, the fact that it's not completely solid is fascinating in its fullness, but it's also fascinating in the sense that you really believe in that weight. So I guess what I'm saying is that it truly is a modernist endeavour, this idea between, you know, surface and depth, and in that sense to me you really continue that dialogue and don't buy into the fact that we slide along a virtual surface with no depth. So you're completely old school, Michael, welcome to the club. But you know, there's so many things that we could talk about here in terms of, you know, duality, part one, part two, inside the enclosure, outside the enclosure. You've almost got two, you know, completely autonomous shows here. With two completely different works. I don't buy the idea of residue. I don't think one's a residue of the other. I think they're actually in opposition and sometimes dialectic with each other.
Well, I think it might have been a family member that suggested that one was male and one was female. Well, I did have a nickname for this other one here, which as it was developed.
We can turn the tape recorder off.
That's for the side thing. Yeah.
And you're right, Kenny, when you were visiting the studio, you spoke about the visual quality of the work and the figurative nature of, and that you had somehow gone beyond that. But in a kind of way, I mean, this narrative that you spoke of, how do you feel about, I mean, is there a narrative within the work, or is it a kind of more, it's another kind of depth, which is its poetic dimension, which, because I've never heard you really speak about thing I think you might be interested in, but you've never spoken in each of the things that have taken part in about the spirituality.
Yeah.
Why don't you see both of them?
I guess I'm still as much discovering what should be said and what I feel like saying as well in the work, and as well as what I believe should be said through the work or what shouldn't be said just as much, and also working out what works in the work as well. So I'm really not sure what narrative these works should have. They're sort of like, I mean, I guess I know there's an implied sense of narrative, and there's something figurative in the fact that they're human sized objects. And I'm sort of suggesting something, but not showing it. It's sort of abstracted, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. That's a good question for me. I think I've worded in a different way to what you suggested. But I think it's probably a question I've been asking myself.
I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm not sure. I just. I was interested in, with the Rosemary and Ross up here at the bus, and afterwards I was going through, purely coincidental, I was going through the Encounters catalogue from the National Gallery in London, and I came across Stephen Cox. Have you met Stephen Cox?
A long time ago.
Yeah. And I kind of like his work, and I'd forgotten all about it, and I emailed
that you should have a
look at.
The watercolours?
No, the British sculptor.
Oh, okay. Not the British strange thing.
No, he's a guy my age, maybe a bit younger, who was a minimalist, serious modernist, who gave that up about probably in the mid-30s what Botting, and started carving, not figuratively. And he engages with the work now in a kind of...
Did you say not figuratively?
Pardon?
Did you say not?
Not.
Not.
He carves the latest work on the stuff and encounters he did for an Avatar Gallery, a kind of psychopagraph, you know. He's making a kind of encounter with Piero Don Francesca's nativity. That's the piece he works from there. And then he talks about this thing of inside and outside of the two boxes. There's the two carved stones, copper guy, and they're big. I mean, they are really big, you know. And he talks about the lack of narrative in those works, because he doesn't want a narrative in the work. Although it's implied, because it's about, you know.
Yeah, it's got a narrative, right?
Yeah. And it's both life and death at the one time, because he's, and I'm not religious, so if you excuse me, you probably wound up on this stuff, and I'm not, but he talks about where the work is both the nativity and at the same time the tomb. And
it's another binary opposition.
Yeah, well, the birth death cycle is another.
And then he also talks about the hardness of the material, which he, you know, in critiques of the work, well, how can you deal with this with that, with a material that's so hard? And so he talks then about the honesty of that. The honesty is hard, and therefore the material is, you know, can be measured that way. And so that's why I asked you to maybe look them up, and hopefully pop that, and you can have that. But and they kind of remind me strongly of that, especially the piece at Bus, with, because the absence of what was in that really coffin, where you had actually placed kind of natural matter to rot, where there was a residue of smell in the room. You know, not a lot, it was just there, you could just detect that. It kind of, and I wondered about that with these two too, you know. See, I think, I see this one here, is, and when I had a look at it last week with Stephen, I felt it to be slightly figurative, and unlike you, I see the thing emptying itself out into that hole up in the ground. That there's a kind of evacuation into that space from whatever is inside the object. And so that, you know, not in a negative way, of course, but it's part of there. Is that, am I going too far?
No, 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 no. Yeah, I think you pointed, yeah, very certain things.
But your relationship to material has always been good, hasn't it? I mean, you've got that, say, quite a way back, you know, the way in which you use materials to make things. You always seem to get the right material and use it in the right way.
But it's the use of materials to question things as
yes.
well. And I think where we're talking about sort of binary polarities, I think that's something that we could describe perhaps as a dialectic, where you have sort of opposing views or opposing conditions. And that sets up a system of questioning, of debates between them. And that's really what these do for me. I think your question about perhaps, you know, what are you trying to say? I was very interested in your response, Michael, when you said that you're figuring it out. You're actually engaged in sort of a dialectic process, you're questioning. And so for me, you know, whether that's a material questioning or that's, if you like, the ontological questioning of materials, obviously spills over into a metaphysical questioning very quickly. But it is, I find them all, in a sense, what I've always enjoyed about your work is that it feels like the manifestation of some sort of philosophical conundrum or hypothesis or question, and I really engage trying to respond to that question.
Just one of the nice things with the pieces for the history of what's been actually done at in this gallery is it's really picking up on more the horizontal line of the gallery. And look, we've had a few works that have dug a few holes and used the roof and used the middle, but this is another one that really, you know, takes that enough, it pushes it along again, the dialogue of the picking up on the horizon of the office gallery space, in particular the floor. A couple of things that you've done are really beautiful on this floor is that the imposed weight of the work in the enclosure is actually a paper weight or a weight for the whole floor, its evenness, in comparison to, say, a walk across, say, the steps of the Louvre or walking across the floors of Gertrude Street. There's a great imbalance in the floor. Ours is pretty flat and always has been pretty good, but we know that there's a few soft spots. And this work...
We're getting more and more of that.
Yeah, this work's starting to sort of, you know, feel out where those soft spots are in our floor. You know, you notice how floor goes in two directions, and it's just so beautifully placed. You know, it's precarious. It doesn't sit on a nail line. It sits where the boards could break. There is a nail line, but from one position you don't see them, so you feel that it's going to weigh a bit. That's going to cause some havoc. Mm-hmm. And just the offset of its actual placement, this little triangle just where the grid is, and this need, for me at least, to want to kick it back square with the enclosure walls is just so enticing, you know, so joyous thing, you know, like, I just want to go and push it and I can't handle it, you know, because so many people want this enclosure space. The history of the enclosure space in recent times has been as a video place, and people have either had this problem about, well, should I put chairs in, should I take chairs in, should I stack chairs up, this sort of thing. And if you didn't know, people would come to the gallery, would be thinking, oh, I'll go in enclosure, there'll be a video working here. And there's just obviously no sign of that, but the work taps into the history of the viewer coming to this space. And you provide this object, which is not quite in the right spot for viewing video work, and there's no video, so. But just, you know, it's just lovely for the history of what's been done in the enclosure. And we've got to thank you for that, and it's a great thing you've done. But you obviously didn't do it for those reasons.
But I think that skew is really important, because the skew for me is what breaks the dichotomy or the dialectic that we've been talking about, and hones it straight back into the continuum of art history, particularly minimalism and its suppression of puritanism and spirituality, and even, let's say, religiosity. And it's like a divining rod. As heavy as that object is, you can feel it quivering its way. Actually trying to, I take the great as more emanating the sense of history. It's the object is trying to find its way through that vapor of history in some way. And continues, I think we talked about Paul Feig as an artist, a post-minimal artist, that really sort of exaggerated and amplified the religious tomb-like nature that the early minimalists tried to suppress so much. So in that sense, to me, it forms an immediate sort of continuum. And I think David and I were referring to it as a sort of the Moby Dick of the enclosure. Something that was, you know, eminently doubtful and anxious. Even something that could imagine its own sort of macabre death. But at the same time, always moving, always seeking, despite its own weight and bulk.
I mean, just a related point, but I found when I first encountered the object in the enclosure that it seemed more real than the enclosure itself, or even the gallery itself. But it seemed to disrupt the space. I mean, we talked about the encounter bit here, but it has such density and integrity, and yet it punctures the gallery in a sense. But even beyond that, and so the sort of question that it posed was, in terms of, you know, where which is the void? Is it that hole in the floor, or is it space around me, or is it beyond these walls? It was a very curious activation of the gallery space.
It renders the rest of the space very prop-like in relation to this, a structural thing that's been dislocated or removed from its structure. But, you know, we probably should also talk about I think everyone would agree with me that there's just an overwhelming sense of brightness in proportion of what's going on inside the enclosure. In terms of the size of the object, particularly its the feel of the object in that space. We haven't so much talked about the proportions of this object in relation to this space, and then also how the two objects actually speak to each other or don't.
Yeah, I wouldn't know even where to begin on that. I'd have to say that probably coming out of that initial proposal, I had this sort of sense that I had to relate the works always. And even setting this show up, I think I was talking to you, Amy, about having links between, like, specific links that I'd left so that the viewer could come and link the two works together, and I thought that was important. And I don't know what to think about that at this stage, whether that is important to make or whether it isn't. This is the first time I had two works together. I've had three before, but this is the first time I've had two, so it's kind of, yeah, I'm not sure what to say.
I'm being playful here, Michael, but the exit, the relationship between the open exit door, it's the way we come into the gallery, and the way that that's the outdoor, suggesting that that may need to be, you know, like, could be bigger if it was a little bigger. And I know that this is proportion for other reasons, it's nothing to do with this, but just even sitting here, it's like you come in the gallery this way, and you go out this, you know, you go out through this thing, and then you go down, you know. And it even suggested that its placement is could be closer to the wall. And I'm just talking from experiential, you know, point of view. That's my thing, is it maybe isn't big enough, you know. Or conversely, it's Jolstra Bureau size, you know. Yeah. That's my feeling about the piece in terms of its scale.
Yeah. I agree absolutely. It's such a strong and exciting reading. What I like is that it's the last thing you experience as you leave the space and suddenly realize. But I mean, that. What we've been discussing, you know, that critique of the gallery space by the objects, we don't just mean it's about a critique of galleries or gallery spaces, mm-hmm. It's a critique of the fabric of this world and this place that we're inhabiting. So just to get back to Ewan's question about what is that critique focusing on? Or...
But it must be quite distinct, because they're really directions, they're things of space. They allow an escape in a certain direction, like the one at Bath is open towards the ceiling. So it's actually either something that sinks, and then these ones are something that, and this one is something that seems to flow in a certain direction. And there must be a series of decisions that you make.
Decision in terms of directing the viewer in one?
No, not so much that, just in terms of what it is that's getting contained or uncontained.
I'm interested in Kit's, you know, use of the word critique. I'm not convinced that it's you know, the word's actually trying to sort of represent or enact critique as much as it is a, I guess, an honest exploration of perhaps the relationship between the concrete and the spiritual.
Yeah. It's more of a question rather than an answer, I suppose.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a great word to try to throw up in the air in relation to, I think, your practice. And do you see your practice as being critical? As in, I guess, trying to undermine or unpack certain received histories of spirituality, or conversely, received histories of art history. Not to mention the narrative of architecture and by extension, narrative full stop.
I reckon there would be, but it would be more implicit in the work, and to the point where I don't quite know myself even what it is. If there is a critique of, or a question in regards to specific space, or question generally that the works as a body actually do, I have questions, I have specific questions, but I would hope that there's something by working with the materials, bodily working with these materials, there's something that works itself out that's not an intellectual game or sort of trying to engage with this. So yeah, I guess I'm trying to be honest about that as much as wanting to be aware of not trying to specifically direct interpretation.
Another way of asking, or another way of sort of addressing this is a question I asked you a couple of weeks ago. Is Michael Needham a religious artist? Or is Michael Needham an artist that happens to have a spiritual content in his work? I think they're two different sorts of approaches.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that's a more specific way of addressing that issue of critique. In, you know, the religious artist, in my opinion, would be illustrating certain theological beliefs and histories, as opposed to what I get from your practice, or what I get particularly from Nisha, is a more ambiguous sort of position.
Well, I reckon that would obviously very accurately describe the difference between religious and spiritual, because certainly if I claim to be religious in that sense, I would. I'd be illustrating a doctrine, and there wouldn't be a question. I'd be just doing it, and I wouldn't be oscillating myself between how to actually make the important. I definitely admit there's something that I think I'm looking for some kind of engagement, which to use a better word, spiritual. Within the materials themselves, though. So it is something there, but as I said before, I'm sort of trying to excavate. There's something there, but that's a belief, but attempting to extract that somehow is part of the process of making the work.
I guess it's back to critique. Research versus critique. I don't think it's critique. No, that's what I mean. It's almost completely opposed.
Well, I think it's driven, it's driven by your religious beliefs, though, isn't it? I mean, you are a committed Christian,
you know?
That doesn't mean to say that your work is driven in a literal sense, though, but they illustrate those beliefs, but somehow it manifests in a kind of metaphysical or poetic dimension, in the way, say, Eliot would write about those feelings.
Yeah.
Its relationship to architecture for me is spiritual. It's entrances and exits. And you can't stop people bringing their own baggage, unfortunately. I don't think anyone can approach art in a completely disinterested way. This I've discovered, you know, after 20 years of teaching, it's impossible to be disinterested because everybody was positioned, you know. And even those that were disinterested became positioned after a few months. But, I mean, I look at this work here and for me, it's like an entrance rather than an exit. It's very reminiscent of a traditional, classic entrance to an Etruscan tomb, exactly that shape. It would be slightly buried, but that's its shape, because that's where you enter from, and then you go down.
David mentioned that.
It's as narrow as that. I don't know if you.
When you stand closer to it, in a sense.
Yeah.
That when you know, I guess my thing is when you're confronted by the exit sign, then you're asking yourself to go out as if you were going through Flagstaff or Parliament Station and going down through the levels. Mm. Not through the levels. So that was sort of where I was going with that. But I agree, I read that too. I think that,
you know, it looks to me like entrance. Yeah. Whereas this for me is exit from the other side. I think the materials, I think you are true to the materials you use, not the kind of modernist thing that you use. But I do see your work very, very strongly as a kind of, you know, very potent spiritual dimension that I have to read as poetic, because I can't, as a kind of agnostic, I find that I've got otherwise, you know, and so anyway, that becomes
another word
of spirituality. Because that raises a critique for those of us, you know, who don't believe, you know, doesn't it? Because eventually you are questioned to enter and engage with the thing that you've made. So in a way it could be, yes.
I guess that's it. I mean, it probably points to a good reason for being interested in sculpturally in the real materials, because if you don't have, I was doing this work not with materials, I'd be presenting maybe, you know, 2D work, images, signs or something, and then that would be the way to read it, and because that's what it would.
That's what happened in the past. I remember you moving from painting because you found that you couldn't do, couldn't say what you wanted to say, so you moved towards materials.
Yeah, and say if you've got I always hope to be able to claim this work is accessible to anyone, and if say there's a different word to spirituality, and you have to engage with this on a poetic level, then hopefully the materiality itself gives that, or offers that as another way to enter it, because the materials themselves, if that's all we've got, then that's, and living in a materialistic age, you know, like that, if that is all we have, then that's what we have to
do. They're definitely not death of the author type of works. They're, you know, responsibility informed types of work, to borrow two of Bart's titles, you know. They're the responsibility informed kind of pieces, and they're made so well and working on so many complex levels that it just allows the viewers to travel through them, you know, to work their way through what they are, what they deny you from being, and so forth, or what they allow you to think. And that's the success in the work for me, is that they're really responsible pieces. Not many people do that. You know, they say, here it is, you know, you suck it in. I mean, you know, this one does that. And you also aren't doing it, they're not that self-conscious that way. Not, you know, not telling me about you this way, they're just saying, you better work harder as a viewer, you better work hard. And you'll get more from it if you do. And that's what I mean by the responsibility of the form, and that's what, you know, that's what Bart was talking about, that too.
Yeah. Although Bart is really critical now.
Tape's running out, Adrian, for the benefit of those playing at home.
I would suggest that there's some tension in this particular sculpture piece, which to me is not necessarily a productive tension, and it resides in the way you treated the outside of the sculpture and in the way you treated the inside, and this sort of uneasy, relationship between the illusionism that you've got going, particularly if we look at it from this angle, and that sense of sort of material formality that's happening from when you're looking at it from the side or from the other, or from the back. And it plays into this sense of a sort of standalone plant sculpture and a located sort of object. It seems to sort of be a little bit confused in those, between those sorts of, dualities. There's something about the sculpturalness of it that is undermined in the other work, that it is, the concrete work is a sculptural form, but there are certain things that are happening to that sculptural form. There's some type of activation of it that subtly, let's use the word critique, does critique the notion of a standalone sculptural form. I'm not sure that this one is doing that for me.
Is that part because of where it is? I mean, like, if you thought about the whole space, not just as a hallway, but if this work wasn't here, do you think that there'd be, or is it in the object?
I think it's in the object, and I think it's also in the space. But I sort of yearn for that illusionism to somehow continue into engaging with the sense of the architecture. The device that you've used in there of the grate does something to that object, which is quite layered.
The grate,
there's no reliance on the device in here. Maybe that's something that you could give some thought to. And then the encounter of the object too. In I was talking about coming across this sort of my known terms in the field. Blinding sunlight, and there's this aperture, and you're trying to adjust your eyes to that darkness. But the encounter of it is quite important in that they are partially embedded, but also revealing their own autonomy. There's a, there's that sort of frisson that goes on there that I'm just missing with this piece. It's art sculpture, and you come around the back, and all of a sudden it's illusion.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Do something about the surface and the waves. It should almost be hidden or less, not necessarily sort of copying that one, but
you've got the grid device up in the back though.
Yeah,
you've just chosen not to excavate it out.
Yeah, that was a choice, but it's I don't know.
Doesn't mean that you haven't sort of, it's not there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what you're saying, I think with the piece in the small room, I see the grate, the grill as a kind of switch, and once you've encountered it, triggers the work and associations that then allows you to engage with it. I can see this is not porous and its surface is resilient in a kind of sculptural object sense. But I see the entrance as the trigger, and its content is embedded, and it's somehow that metaphysical thing of entering. And once you've entered, you'll get its content. That's when its poetry is revealed. But you can only enter from one side. It has to be resilient. It has to be fireproof. It has to keep us outside. We can only come in from there. So I think, in a kind of way, I know what you mean. It's much more towards sculpture than this, but that's actually, I think, the difference between this might appearing more contemporary in its appearance and this may not, and therefore the critique is somewhere in that space between. And also, listening to you guys, it's really interesting because you know your space so well, and everything that comes into the space impacts on your kind of ownership of that space, whereas I'm probably the true viewer because I come in as a viewer, and so I don't have the same ownership of the space, so I have to deal with the work within the space that's been positioned. If I stay long enough with the work, obviously I have to take it.
I agree. I think the final thing to say on that, well, for me anyway, on that is the relationship between the two, and what does that mean? And you know, we go back to that idea of residue. For me, and I'm not sure if you felt the same way, the richness and evocativeness of how that sculpture works in the enclosure, rather than such a, this sounds like a critical term, but rather than such a heavy-handed approach with this other sculptural object. I wonder if there's a sense of that week during installation, and maybe this is something that you might carry with you or you might reject, and there's that sense of responsiveness to what's actually happening when the object starts, you know, forming a narrative with this space, and whether there could be some flexibility and reactiveness to that in terms of what else goes in the space and how that relates to it. I think, for example, I talked with Dave about Dominic Redfern's piece with two television monitors. When he installed the piece, he thought that there's something else was needed. The space was a little bit bigger than he thought, perhaps, or there was just something else that was needed. So he just took a little video of the PowerPoint with some very small monitor sitting on the floor. It literally became a footnote, but it was enough. And I wonder if that sense of confidence could start permeating the way you feel about when you're installing rather than in the studio, like in the objects and thinking, right, this is the plan. Mm. Yeah. Just observations.
Mm. Obviously, Adrian did this to me when I had my show here, and I still got the scars, if you have to see. I just wanted to sort of come back on this one outside of the enclosure, because I agree, it is more of a sort of mute sculptural object in many respects. And I was very interested when you said earlier that you were conceiving at one point of the show being on, you know, a show here and another show elsewhere in town at the same sort of time. And I wonder how these would read if they weren't quite so close together, if they were sort of different sort of portals in different sort of spaces. But this one outside of the enclosure, I mean, it makes me think of that long, honourable history of objects that are used to talk about incredibly complex spiritual and metaphysical conditions, and that are, in a sense, and forgive me for being in any sense offensive, which I don't mean to be, but they are in a sense dumb, or they're even sort of crass, or they fail dramatically to actually eventuate or provide the metaphysical condition. The wooden carving of Christ on the cross in many churches across Italy is just one example. So they're actually quite often, you know, simple, dumb, you know, even badly made. They're not all high art. You know. But for me, what I find so powerful about them is that their failure to be metaphysical and beyond is part of what is so powerful about them. I'm getting a segue there.
You're letting off the hook.
But this makes me contemplate, you know, what is beyond? It fails to take me there, but it still makes me ask that question.
That's a bit unfair, but I think because if you're talking about those coffees in the capella, I mean, they had a function. They were probably conceived as art, but they had a function for the congregation, whereas the function here is different. I think it's much broader, and I think, you know, having talked away and thinking as a critique, you know, come down that positive cord, but it probably is. It does engage you. Your ask questions. And whereas the cross is never, I mean, because no question has to be asked. I mean, that's the whole idea. You don't ask the question, you just accept.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, I suppose in a sense, I see them as like a tool contemplation, it's an aid or something.
Mm.
I mean, we're getting towards Heidegger and that tool, art,
it's not even so much the object, it's what you said before about feeling as though there was that space. It was more your thought process than that, you know, that you had that work and you had that sort of resolve somehow in your mind, but then you felt this need to somehow activate this outside space because that's the strategy you start. So I'm not even talking so much now about the object, I'm talking about more of that sense of need. You know, the why, the need, and maybe there's a point there where you just pause in that thought process and question that, and maybe an object's there, maybe it isn't, or I'm not even saying what the outcome should be, I'm just talking about that particular moment you reach in your thought process as being a fascinating one. And maybe it's about confidence, maybe it's not. But it's an interesting moment to reflect on in practice. Because, I mean, we see it a lot in this situation, where, you know, artists will feel the need to do something else.
To fill a space or to fill something.
Yeah, well, in your case, I'm not even suggesting filling the space, but more addressing the notion of uncontained, being on the inside and being on the outside, and how that could be facilitated in so many different ways, I guess.
Fulfilling the expectation of the space.
Yeah.
Rather than filling.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not, you know, I mean, I've already addressed the object specifically, but I'm trying to address the way that, it's a difficult conundrum because you invest so much in the actual object, in the sculptural object, and then the idea of installing that object to create certain narratives in the space is almost a completely different chapter of the work and the process.
Given you've got a rather generous week to install it, you almost go to that point. If you had a few days to install it, you'd probably go, you know, but you'd make decisions, but bigger and harder.
You start white-hacking yourself, like
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have to pick up children, so I'm going to have to exit. Not only temporarily, I went to the ashes as I went to the exit.